Okay. So we today is a very big day in the Vaishnav calendar. So what we're going to do during this first hour, and the reason I'm mentioning first hour is because during the normal time of class, I'm going to be speaking about Prabhupada's arrival in the United States, Jiva Goswami's appearance, and Vamana Dev's appearance. Three things which occurred today. And then also, the devotees are celebrating Bhakti Chu Maharaj's appearance day. But for that, that will come in about an hour from now from our temple room, where we're going to, I'm not going to broadcast the whole thing, but at least my portion of that will be broadcast, because it's Bhakti Chu Maharaj's appearance day, and that will occur in an hour from now. But during this first hour, and after an hour, we're going to sign off and then back on again just for a few minutes in the temple, so you can see my offering and see what the preparations we've made for Bhakti Chu Maharaj's appearance day. So, a lot of things happening. Just let me set this up. And of course, first, we should chant like we normally do. Let me set up the chat window. Chat window. All right. Okay, got it. Okay, so first we're going to chant like we normally do before class, and because it's the appearance day of Srila Jiva Goswami, and I guess Bhakti. Srila Bhakti Chu Maharaj, of course, Srila Prabhupada's arrival in the United States, and Lord Vamadeva's appearance. Anyway, we'll chant away Vaishnava Thakur before the class, if that's all right with everybody. And then we will speak about those three subject matters which I just mentioned. And then after that, we'll go to the temple and see the program for Bhakti Chu Maharaj. How about that? Oh, hey, Vaishnava Thakura, Doi Arasagar, Edase Karuna Kori, Diyapada Chaya, Shodaya Maya. I gotta do one thing. I gotta put a band-aid on my fingers because I did have a little cut. And I can't play the guitar unless I have this Band-Aid, which you call a plaster in the South Pacific. Okay. Start again. Oh, hey, Vaishnava Thakur, Nara Sagar, Hey, Nase Kuruna Kauri, Diyapada Jaya, Yodaya Maya, Nomara Charana Kauri, Jaya Vega Tami, Jaya Dosha Shodi, Jaya Guna Jehoda, Sangha, Ewe Amare, Bukshichi Sangha Rase, Ekaki Amara Nai Boy Moro, Udinam Sankirtanahe, Dumi Kripa Kori, Shakta Bindu Diya, Korone Deha Krishna Namatale,
say to Mara Krishna Dite Parat Tomara Shrikate Aje Amita Gangala Krishna Krishna Boli Kayatava Pache Pache Uhe Rais Napatakura Doyara Sagarita Sekaruna Kone Yavada Chai
such as she, Shivad, his divine grace, Abhaya Chalanada Bhakta Vananda, Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Found, Jarya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Arita Stakur Ki Jai, Friend, Say, Kahosh, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Garata Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrindi Gajai Shishi Radha Krishna Gopinath Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Ki Jai Maturam Ki Jai Jagannatha Swami Ki Jai Yamunamai Ki Jai Srimati Lassi Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Gajai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru Gauranga. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. So Namaum Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamani. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nivashesha Shunyavade Paschacha Tejatarane. So, Omaganata Mirandasha Gananjana Shalakya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, let us first talk about Prabhupada's arrival in the United States. On this day, in 1965, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, aboard the Jala Duta, that means the sea messenger ship, arrived at Boston Harbor, and he had to go through the formal customs and immigration department, and he was given 3 months to be in the United States. Of course, later on he extended that, and he was able to stay in the United States much longer, and eventually he got a green card of residency in the United States. So when Srila Prabhupada arrived, what did he think? Well, first thing is, after going through immigration and customs, he walked through the city of Boston, and he saw the degradation of America. And many of you are thinking, boy, I'd really like to get to America, or New Zealand, or Australia, because you're thinking, if you're in Fiji, you're thinking this is the promised land. This is Vaikuntha. No, it's not Vaikuntha. Anyway, so you may be thinking that. So anyway, So what was Prabhupada thinking? Actually, we know to a certain extent what he was thinking, not completely, because you can't understand the mind of a pure devotee. But we understand to a certain extent because he wrote this beautiful poem the day after walking through Boston and seeing the degradation of the city, the slaughterhouses, the cinemas, the hotel. I mean, God knows what else Prabhupada saw, but you know, it's a city, a normal city, like any city in the world, and even now, even cities like cities in India. They're all the same, basically. So Prabhupada wrote this beautiful poem called Amarkane Bhagavat Dharma. And I'm going to read a few of the stanzas in English from that poem, although the poem was written originally in Bengali. So this shows Prabhupada's deep humility, deep dependence on Krishna, and his high-class nature, being aware of the degraded situation which he was facing, and how impossible was his task, except, as Prabhupada would say, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary, because when one has the order of the spiritual master, anything is possible. A blind man, as described in the book Chaitanya Charitamrita, a blind man can see, a layman can walk, a dog can swim an ocean. So Prabhupada understood that, and he understood it was up to Krishna, his absolute dependence on Krishna. So let's hear this. My dear Lord Krishna, he starts, you are so kind upon this useless soul, but I do not know why you have brought me here. Now you can do whatever you want with me, whatever you like with me. But I guess you have some business here. Otherwise, why would you bring me to this terrible place? Most of the population here is covered by the material modes of ignorance and passion. Absorbed in material life, they think themselves very happy and satisfied, and therefore they have no taste for the transcendental message of Vasudeva. I do not know how they will be able to understand it. In other words, Prabhupada was contrasting his, let's see, understanding of Krishna consciousness with the degradation, the lowest class of people that you do find who are eating meat, taking intoxication, gambling, and having illicit sex. But I know your causeless mercy can make everything possible for you, because you are the most expert mystic. How will they understand the mellows of devotional service? In other words, rasa. I couldn't possibly understand that, because they're only eating meat. But Lord, I am simply praying for your mercy so that I will be able to convince them about your message. All living entities have come under control of the illusory energy by your will, and therefore, if you like, by your will, they can also be released from the clutches of illusion. I wish that you may deliver them. And here's his compassion. Therefore, if you so desire their deliverance, then only will they be able to understand your message. The words of Srimad Bhagavatam are your incarnation, and if a sober person repeatedly receives it with submissive oral reception, then he will be able to understand your message. And here Prabhupada quotes from the Srimad Bhagavatam, and I'm not going to read all these quotes. First canto, second chapter, text 17 to 21, about how one hears submissively, one has the right to devote, traditional attitude, the desire for material enjoyment will be cleansed from the heart of a devotee. And continuing, he will become liberated from the influence of the modes of ignorance and passion, and thus all inauspicious things accumulated in the core of the heart will disappear. How will I make them understand this message of Krishna consciousness? I am very unfortunate, unqualified, and the most fallen. Therefore, I am seeking your benediction so that I may convince them, for I am powerless to do so on my own. Somehow or other, O Lord, you have brought me here to speak about you. Now, my Lord, it is up to you to make me a success or failure as you like. O spiritual master of all the worlds, I can simply repeat your message. so if you like, you could make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. Only by your causeless mercy will my words become pure. I am sure that when this transcendental message penetrates their hearts, they will certainly feel engladdened and thus become liberated from all unhappy conditions of life. Wow. So here's Prabhupada's great faith in the transcendental sound vibration. Oh Lord, I am just like a puppet in your hands. So if you have brought me here to dance, then make me dance. Make me dance, O Lord. O Lord, make me dance as you like. Wow. Wow. That is Atmanivedanam. And then final verses. I have no devotion, nor do I have any knowledge, but I have strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. I have been designated as Bhaktivedanta. And now, if you like, you can fulfill the real purport of Bhaktivedanta. Because Bhaktivedanta means devotion, absolute devotion, and knowledge. And Prabhupada signed this, he said, the most insignificant, unfortunate, a beggar, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, on board the ship Jaladutta Commonwealth Pier, Boston, Massachusetts, USA, dated the 18th of September, 1965. So that was the day after Prabhupada arrived, after Prabhupada had gotten his impressions of America. Wow. Very, very powerful. So today is the day that Prabhupada arrived, and that's the day the Krishna Conscious Movement started in the Western world. So it's a very, very special day. And of course, on this day, Bhakti Chumar has decided to celebrate his appearance on this day, even though he didn't actually appear on this day, but he decided to actually have his appearance day on this particular day. Okay, very significant. So now we'll get on with the other celebrations of today. That is Jiva Goswami's appearance and also Lord Vamana's appearance. Okay. I guess we'll talk about Lord Vamanadeva first. So Lord Vamanadeva is the dwarf incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And anyway, we know it Advaita Chuta Nadir Ananta Rupa Madhyam Purana Purusham Navyovanam Cha. That there's one God and he appears in a variety of ways. Give me a second, I want to get some water to drink. So he appears in a variety of ways, and he can do all that simultaneously, which means at the same time, in different places, unlimited circumstances, unlimited forms. Advaita Chuta Nadir Ananta Rupa Madhyam Purana Purusham Navyovanam Cha. Okay. So here's Lord Vamanadeva. So let's start about talking about Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj had a son. His son was named Virochana. Virochana had a son, and his son was Bali Maharaj. And so Prahlad was blessed that none of his descendants would ever be killed by Vishnu or any of his incarnations. So Bali Maharaj was killed because he was the head of, because Prahlad Maharaj, Virochana, and Bali, they were actually in a demon family. They were in charge of the demons, but they were Krishna conscious at the same time. And Bali Maharaj was in charge of the demons at that particular time. And his guru's name was Shukracharya. Shukracharya means the acharya, the seminal acharya. In other words, just bodily acharya. Nothing's too spiritual about that. So Bali was killed in battle with the demigods, but Shukracharya revived his life and performed a sacrifice, what's called the yajna. And during that sacrifice, Bali Maharaj was empowered with special horses, a bow, and armor, and he attacked the demigods, empowered by his guru, because he had faith in his guru. Indra at that time did not have so much faith in his guru, Brihaspati. So Bali attacked the demigods, and Brihaspati said, let's get out of here. because these demons are more powerful. So Bali Maharaj took over heaven and was performing 100 horse sacrifices. Indra's mother at the same time, because you know how mothers are, they care for their children, was very bereaved. She thought, my son was kicked out of heaven, was kicked out of his home. So naturally, who does she go to? She goes to her husband. Said, you got to do something about this, Kashyapa. And Kashyapa said, I will do something about this. You would see. Have to perform this Payovrata devotional service, and you will get a son who can get the heavenly kingdom back for your other son, Indra. So she performed this Payovrata, which means basically a vow, just living on milk and other things like that. And so then eventually Lord Vishnu appeared with four arms to her. This is before she gave birth to Vamanadeva, and said, worship your husband, because within your husband, Kashyapa, is me, Lord Vamanadeva. So plenary portion, that means non-different from Krishna, Advaita, was transferred from Kashyapa to Aditi's womb. Brahma, Lord Brahma, prayed to the Lord in the womb. It's interesting. You actually find Advaitacharya also praying to Lord Chaitanya when Lord Chaitanya was within Shachi Mata's womb. Anyway, and the Lord took birth. He had four arms, and he was born on the Shravana Dwadasi, which is called the Vijay or Victorious Dwadasi, which is today. Then he changed into the dwarf form, you know, very small, perfectly formed. And he was given the sacred thread by Brahaspati, and all the demigods offered different things to him, and he turned on his Brahman effulgence. And immediately, pretty much immediately after he was born, because in the heavenly planets, whether you're Lord Vishnu or whether you're just an ordinary demigod, no baby is allowed. You know, no diapers, no babies allowed. So, anyway, so he turned on his Brahman effulgence, and then he went to the sacrifice performed by Bali Maharaj, because Bali Maharaj, as I mentioned before, was performing the sacrifice, like 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices to secure his position, even though he was in the heavenly planets, he wanted to secure it. So Bali Maharaj, being very Brahminical, even though he was in a, say, demon family, he wasn't a demon, that was just his family. A lot of his family were really good devotees, like Prahlad Maharaj, Varochana, his father, etc. So Bali washed Vamanadeva's feet, you know, he stopped the sacrifice, because that's the etiquette. Even if you're doing the sacrifice, if a Brahmin, a great saint, arrives, wash their feet, receive them, ask them, what do you want? So he asked him. He asked Vamanadeva, what do you want? Do you want land? Do you want a wife? Anyway, no comment. Do you want money? And Lord Vamana at that time didn't reply. He just said, you have great ancestors like Haranyakashipu, Haranyaksha, and Pallad, of course. Haranyakashipu, Haranyaksha, not really ancestors you want to talk about, but, you know, they became purified. So, and then Lord Vamana said, actually, all I want is 3 steps or 3 paces of land. Bali Maharaj replied to him, this is not so intelligent. You can have anything in the universe. I am in charge of everything. What's going on here? You know, you've got to have some brains. Lord Vamana replied, look, I'm in control of my senses. If I'm not satisfied with 3 paces of land, then I will never be satisfied with anything. And of course, that's what Bhagavad Gita tells us. Avratam gyanam etena gyanina nichavayana kama rupena kontiya dushprena lenacha. That one is never satisfied, and it burns like fire. The desires, and trying to satisfy your desires means like throwing gasoline on a fire, to put it out. Just makes it further inflamed. It's like if you have a nice car, you want a nicer car. If you want a, if someone gives you a Tesla, you want a newer one. or a better one. There's no end to desires. Anyway, so, Polly said, okay, if all you want is three slips of land, that's what you're going to get. But his guru, Shukracharya, said, no. This is Vishnu, he's tricky. And Bali Maharaj said, yes. Because if I promise, I can't break my promises. And anyway, I want to give everything to Vishnu because he was in a good family. But Shukracharya said, charity is not good. If you endangers your welfare, you better lie. Lying is okay in certain circumstances. Lying's okay. This is from the Bhagavatam. Don't blame me. This is just what the Bhagavatam says. Lying okay is if you're flattering a lady, if you're joking, getting married, earning money, protecting your life, protecting cows, protecting Brahmins. And under certain circumstances, he's right. To protect life, cows, and Brahmins, you really have to protect money. Earn money, you got to do it. Joking also. So Bali disagreed. He said, the earth cannot bear the weight of a sinful liar. So Shukracharya said, all right, you're making a mistake. I curse you to lose everything. Guru cursing disciple. Nice guru. Nice Guru Maharaj. Thank you, Guru Maharaj, for cursing me. So Bali, in order to signify that he was giving these three steps of land, went to pour some water from a jug. But his spiritual master used the spiritual master's mystic power to make himself very small so that the water would not come out of the spout of the jug. So Bali tried to get, the water's not coming out of the spout. What am I going to do? Vamanadeva, Lord Vamanadeva, knew what was happening, so he took a little gucha grass and poked out the eye of Shukracharya, who was actually sitting in the spout. And from that day forward, Shukracharya was blind in one eye, and from that day he hated the Lord. Even though previously he was encouraging Bali Maharaj to worship the Lord, but to get what he wanted. That's called Sakama Bhakti. Sometimes Sakama Bhaktas, when they get what they want, or they don't get what they want, they get angry with God. So that's really bad. So at that point, after the water came out, and Vamana was actually promised in a very formal way, Lord Vamana increased his size, and he took the size of the universe. Woo! The first step, we stepped over the earth. Second step, the whole universe, and he kicked the whole universe. And the Ganges came out of that. Phew. Lord Brahma began to worship Lord Vamanadeva with the Ganges coming out of Lord Brahma's Kamandalu, that means little water pot. Jambavan, who you remember from the Brahmayan, circumambulated Lord Brahma and this whole thing that was going on. And the followers of Bali got really angry. They tried to kill Vamanadeva. Imagine, Vamanadeva's so big, how are they going to kill him? No brains. Some were killed, but Bali told them to stop. Garuda came and tied up Bali Maharaj with ropes of Varuna. It was like watery ropes. Lord Vamana said to Bali Maharaj, you are a cheater. You promised me three steps. There's nowhere else for me to take a step. And Bali said, okay, you can take the third step on my head. And Prahlad came to witness, and Lord Vamana placed his foot, which is gigantic at that point, on the head of Bali Maharaj and pushed him down all the way to Sutala, one of the planetary systems. Lord Brahma said to Lord Vamana, don't punish him anymore. But Lord Vishnu, he said, praise Bali. He says, Bali is blessed in his next, let's say, service, not life, but after he's finished in Sutala, where I will become the guard and the doorman, he will become Indra after the present Indra just goes. Because Indra is just a post. It's not a person, Indra is a post. So the demigods retook heaven with Vamana, who remains there, and Lord Vamana Dev is continually worshipped by Indra, and Lord Vamana's expansion guards the lower planetary system, Sutala, where Bali Maharaj resides. And Bali Maharaj is considered a Mahajana. Mahajana means a great soul, one of the Dwadasha Mahajanas, 12 great souls, who set an example. And what example does he set? Atmani Vedanam. What does Atmani Vedanam mean? To surrender oneself in love. Because we use that word surrender, you know, for real life. Surrender. No, to give oneself, to give one's heart and love, soul, and everything. That's a sannyasi, body, mind, and words. To the service of the Supreme Lord with one's heart. And that's the final process of devotional service of the Bhavakti, nine processes of devotional service. Atma Ivedanam. So today is Lord Vamana Dev's appearance. So that's a brief description. You're welcome to read about it in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Finally, we're going to talk about Srila Jiva Goswami. Srila Jiva Goswami is very, very important personality. Jiva Goswami Ki Jai. Ontologically, he's known as Vilas Manjari. Someone has a question. In this world, when a person takes over a job, the person who leaves usually trains his or her replacement. Does the present Indra have to train Bali? I don't know. I think you'll have to see when you become Indra, Gopal. Why is he going to become Indra? Because Krishna says in the Gita, when one who doesn't perfect his Krishna consciousness after some advancement, he has to go to the heavenly planets. So you'll have to find that out when you go there. So, anyway, so on that happy note, let's talk about Jiva Goswami, who is Vilas Manjari. Manjari means like a small prepubescent girl who assists Radha and Krishna in their pastimes. So, he was the brother of, he was the son of the brother of Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis. And his father's name was Anupama. And he was the only son of the family between his uncles and his father. So he was born with a golden complexion. Like Prabhupada had a golden complexion too. I remember one of the first day I saw Prabhupada was in his room at night, and he was sitting in a gumsha on his bed, and he was completely golden. Glowing gold. So anyway, so what happened is that he had a darshan with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was a baby. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited Ramakeli, which is where Rupa and Sanatan, who at that time were called Dabar, Kast, and Shikara Malik, and they got initiation from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and so did his father, Rupa Sanatan Anupama. Sorry. And so Lord Chaitanya actually not only played with him, but he allowed Srila Jiva Goswami to suck his toe. Can you imagine that? Your God, I'm not your God, don't imagine that. But imagine you're allowed to suck the toe of God. Wow. Talk about empowerment. I would do that any day. Of course, that's Muchi for someone like me with a material body. So his father and his uncles, Rupa and Sanatan, left to serve Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And actually, his father, of course, passed away when he was on his way to Jagannath Puri to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But in any case, he was left alone with his mother. And when he was very small, left alone with his mother after his experience with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would worship Radha and Krishna deities, and he would have dreams of dancing with Gaur Nitai, but feeling great separation from his father and uncles. Can you imagine? Poor little boy. Father and uncles, they all basically took sannyas to join Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's so sad. I mean, sad and pastime. So eventually, when he got a little older, he went to Navadweep to see Lord Nityananda. And he met Lord Nityananda at Shivas Thakur's house. The next day, he went to Sachi Mata's house and was blessed by Sachi Mata and her assistant, and taken on a tour of Navadweep by Lord Nityananda. Wow! Amazing, isn't it? He was taken on the Navadweep Dham Parikrama, which is described by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Navadweep Mahatmya, Navadweep Dham Mahatmya. Anyway, so he was taken there by Lord Nityananda. This whole tour is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and shown all around to see the holy places of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. After that, Lord Nityananda sent him to go to Vrindavan, but first he said, you have to go to Kashi, Benares, to study with its great personality known as Madhusudana Vachaspati, who was the disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He's a great, 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 great scholar. And so it was very important for Lord Nityananda to order Jiva Goswami to study Sanskrit intensely so he would be able to carry out Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. See, Lord Nityananda knew about this mission. He knew what Jiva Goswami had to do because Lord Nityananda is omniscient. Okay, so then after that, Jiva Goswami went to Vrindavan and he met up with Rupa Goswami. Wow. And Sanatana Goswami. While there, he was given his deity of Radha Damodar. And the deity of Radha Damodar, very special, that's a deity that was worshipped by Srila Jiva Goswami, was fashioned by Srila Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami became like his guru at that point. And he performed very menial service. And this is actually the point when one accepts initiation, one should submit pani, srotriyam, brahmanishtam, hear nicely, and consider yourself a servant and do very menial service for the guru. He also proofread Rupa Goswami's literature and serve Rupa and Sanatan and fan Rupa and Sanatan. And he accepted Rupa Goswami's as guru, as I mentioned before. One time something happened. There's different versions of the story. Some of them mentioned it was Rupa Narayan, and others mentioned other personalities, but I'm not going to get it. The story that I understand was that Rupa Narayan was a Digvijay pundit. That means a pundit who goes around challenging everybody to a debate because he thinks by debating people, flapping his mouth, he's going to make money, achieve prestige, and his whole life will be successful. I mean, this happens sometimes. So this Rupa Narayan went to Vrindavan, and he heard about Rupa and Sanatan, and he challenged them to a debate. And Rupa and Sanatan were thinking, you know, why are we going to waste time with this guy? You know, we got better things to do in our lives. So Rupa and Sanatan wrote a certificate that said, this Rupa Narayana won. Okay. Oh my God. And so this Rupa Narayana went with the certificate and showed it to everybody, showed it to Jiva Goswami, and Jiva Goswami became so incensed, that means angry, that he said to Rupa Narayana, let's have a debate. In 7 days, Jiva Goswami defeated Rupa Narayana. And after those 7 days, Rupa Narayan had a call of nature, which happens when you get defeated, and he left Vrindavan. And then Jiva Goswami went to Rupa Goswami, his guru, and said, I've defeated this guy who tried to defame you. And Rupa Goswami said, you've taken sannyas too early in life. You don't belong in Vrindavan. Go back. And so he left Vrindavan and went to Mathura. It's described, some stories say he was living in the hollow of a tree. And after some time, there's different versions of the story. Some people say he was living on the banks of the river crying, and other people say it wasn't Rupert Narayan, it was someone else. But this is the story how the Prabhupada told. So, anyway, so after a year, Sanatana Goswami said, "Where is Jiva Goswami?" And Rupa Goswami described what had happened. And Sanatana Goswami said, "You are not following the orders of our master." And because Sanatana was like the Siksha Guru of Rupa. And Rupa Goswami said, "What am I not following?" And Sanatana said, basically, "Figure it out." And then they came to the quality of Jivadoi, which means being merciful to all living entities. But there's another way of understanding it, which means merciful to Jiva Goswami. So Rupa Goswami understood it and brought Jiva Goswami back. Jiva Goswami also taught what's called Swakiya Ras rather than Parikiya Ras. Parikiya Ras means where Krishna is not married to the gopis and it's girlfriends and boyfriend. And Swakiya means Krishna's married. So in one sense, Krishna is married to the gopis because Krishna got married when he took the part of the cows and the calves and the coward boys during the 1 year that Lord Brahma stole the calves and coward boys. So actually that was the year that were the marriages, and Krishna actually got married to them, so they were all his wives. But the reason Jiva Goswami stressed Swakiya is because his disciples were not advanced to accept Parikiya. They thought it was a bad example. In one sense, it's a bad example, but we don't take it as an example for us. Krishna is God. He can do anything. Whatever he does is automatically dharmic, religious. Jiva Goswami, later on, gave the Emperor Akbar, who was trying to bring everybody together. He definitely was a Muslim, but he actually was very open to all the different religions. And he gave Akbar a vision in this place called Nidiban. It means a sleeping forest for Radha and Krishna. And Akbar helped him construct some temples. And then there was a debate in Agra, which Jiva Goswami took part in. And the debate was to determine what is more glorious, the Yamuna or the Ganges. The Yamuna was, he established because she's the consort of Krishna. He made Akbar promise never to hunt in Braj. Jiva Goswami also was the Siksha Guru of Shaimananda, Narottama Das Thakur, and Srinivasacharya. Just wait for your questions. Wait for your questions. Wait till I finish this narration. Hold your horses. Established the Radhadhara Temple, and Radhadhamadhara Temple. Prabhupada stayed at the Radha Damodar Temple. Prabhupada said the Radha Damodar Temple is the temple of Jiva Goswami, is his eternal residence. Jiva Goswami appeared in this world in 1513, okay, and left this world in 1598. That's about 85 years. So as far as his works are concerned, the most famous, of course, is the what's called the Bhagavat Sandarbha, also known as the Shat Sandarbha. There's six parts to it. The first Sandarbha, which is known as the Tattva Sandarbha, deals with epistemology. Oh my God, that's a big word. Epistemology means, sorry about that. Epistemology means, how do you know what you know? And in this, I'm not going to go through the whole thing, he proved it. Srimad Bhagavatam is the most authoritative evidence, even more than direct perception, that points to the absolute truth. And the second Sandarbha, there's six of them, is called the Bhagavat Sandarbha, and it draws a distinction between Brahman, the impersonal Brahman, and the Paramatma. It also describes the spiritual world, and in the spiritual world there's goodness, which has no contamination, called Vishuddha Sattva. There's discussions of deity worship, the Lord's potencies, the Lord's transcendental position. The third one is called the Paramatma Sandarbha, and it describes Paramatma, the super soul, and the difference between the Lord and living entities, the Lord and his various incarnations, the Lord and his various energies, how the energies of the Lord becomes transformed, but the Lord doesn't become transformed, and how the Leela Avatar incarnations of the Lord respond to the desires of the devotees. And also he was the one who wrote extensively about the six opulences of the Lord, which were originally written by Parasharamuni, which was strength, beauty, wealth, fame, knowledge, and renunciation. And then the fourth book of the Sandarbha is called the Krishna Sandarbha, and there he proves that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Discussion of his qualities, Goloka Vrindavan, the Yadavas, the manifest and unmanifest pastimes. Unmanifest means the pastimes in this world that are still going on that you can't see, the queens, and ultimately the gopis and Srimati Radharani's topmost position. The fifth one we call the Bhakti San Sandarbha, and there's a discussion of devotional service, the ecstasies, difference between the Mahabhagwat, like Srila Prabhupada, and the ordinary devotee like ourselves. The sixth one is called the Priti Sandarbha, that means love. And it's a really deep discussion of love and discussion of different rasas. Rasas, we mean, you know, dasa, shanta, vatsalya, sakya, vatsalya, maturya. And then also the indirect rasas, the overlapping of the rasas. Then he discusses vipralamba, separation, connection, enjoyment, and connection, which is called samboga. And ultimately, he ends with an elaborate description of Srimati Radharani. So these literatures by Jiva Goswami, and also right now I'm doing a narration, which I've done about three quarters of the Gopal Champu of Jiva Goswami, in which he actually goes into elaborate detail concerning the pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan and outside of Vrindavan as they occurred during Krishna's manifest presence. And this earth planet. Srila Jiva Goswami is known as the most erudite scholar of all time, not only in our tradition. And there are departments of different universities, I think it's Benares University, just dedicated to Jiva Goswami and his philosophical acumen is unequaled anywhere, at least on this earth planet. You know, of course, Lord Chaitanya, that's a different thing. But this is how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu empowered him. Jiva Goswami is also instrumental in helping Raghunath Das Goswami with the excavation and legalities surrounding Radha Kunds. Because Raghunath Das Goswami, of course, he got the money, but he didn't want to do anything with money because he came from a very rich family before. He was very much reticent to deal with money. So basically things were put in the name of Srila Jiva Goswami rather than Raghunath Das Goswami, because Raghunath Das Goswami understood his particular, let's say, example was meant to show extreme renunciation. So he worked very, very closely with Srila Jiva Goswami. And as I mentioned before, Srila Jiva Goswami is known as Vilas Manjari in Krishna's pastimes. I mean, a small prepubescent girl who helps Radha and Krishna in their pastimes. And of course, Rupa Goswami is Rupa Manjari. So he, along with his guru, are both Manjaris, along with the other Goswamis in Vrindavan, who are eternally assisting Radha and Krishna. I mean, who can understand what this actually means? One actually has to have spiritual vision to understand what this actually means. So, therefore, we have actually described what we wanted to describe today. So now, give me a second, and I will go back to a normal screen. Give me 1 second detour. I have to alter a few things here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Here we are. Okay, so now I guess I need to unmute you. Let me answer the questions. Hare Krishna was a good question. If all the other gopas got married that year, why didn't Nanda Maharaj get Krishna married at that time? Good question. I think you have to ask Nanda Maharaj that. Maybe he was younger than some of the other gopas or something like that. Anyway, he wasn't married at that particular time. Or maybe he was. I think you'll have to ask one of the Goswamis those questions. That's really above my pay scale. So, let us, hold on a second. Let me unmute you all, or allow you to unmute yourselves so you can ask some questions, or you can type in a question. And as I mentioned before, when we end this class a few minutes later, we're going to the temple to celebrate the appearance day of Bhakti Chumar, so I'll be speaking for a few minutes then. I won't be broadcasting the whole celebration for Bhakti Chumar because I'll just be speaking a little bit and broadcasting part of the celebration. So, who has a question about Jiva Goswami, Lord Vamanadeva, or Srila Prabhupada's arrival in America? Here's a good question. How could Shukracharya be a Brahmin if he had enmity toward Krishna? That's a good question. Well, let's understand the word Brahmin from different perspectives. One is the word Brahmin. Oops, someone unmuted. Let me just mute you. So, from one perspective, Brahmin means someone who was born in a Brahmin family in a Brahmin family. That's from one perspective, which is not the real meaning of Brahmin. From another perspective, the word Brahmin means one who knows Brahman. So one who knows Brahman from the perspective of Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdute, either the Brahman effulgence or the Paramatma or Bhagavan, can be known as a Brahmin. One who knows rituals can be known as a Brahmin. A Smarta, he's known as a Smarta Brahmin. There's different types of Brahmins. And a very learned person can also be known as a Brahmin. That's called a Vipra. So there's Smartas, there's Vipras. There's all sorts of Brahmins. And a Brahmin can be a demon also. It's a good question. And actually, Prabhupada, the Bhagavatam says that in Kali Yuga, many demons will be born in Brahmin families. So they may be, in one sense, Brahmins, but they're not in an actual sense on the highest level of Brahmin. It's a good question, Gopisha. Thank you. Okay. Righty. Oh, here's a question. Hare Krishna, what is Vamanadeva's purpose? Vamanadeva's purpose, 2 points. Aparichanaya sarunam vinashaya chaduskritam. Actually, 3 points, sorry. One is to protect religious principles, reestablish religious principles, protect the devotees like that, and annihilate the miscreants, or at least defeat the miscreants. That's one purpose. That's just one purpose, sorry, because I'm getting to three. Another purpose was to enjoy Ras, because he was very much enjoying cheating the demons. You know, sometimes we enjoy, like, being tricky and cheating someone, right? I mean, I'm not a cheater, but I enjoy being tricky sometimes. It's really a lot of fun. Yeah, it's a lot of fun to be tricky. Who would not want to be tricky? Isn't it? It's fun. Anyway, and the other purpose, what was the other purpose I was thinking of? Oh, yeah. To actually attract us. This is actually one of the most important purposes, perhaps the most important purpose, to attract us. You know, by his pastimes, his wonderful pastimes, because everyone was attracted to Lord Vamanadeva, and we're attracted to. Hearing about the Lord gives us something to think about so that we don't become attracted to the varieties of this material world. So in other words, three things, like the Bhagavad Gita, Parichanaya, Sadhanam, Vinishai, Chaturskritam. Second thing is to enjoy your Ras with his devotees and even with the demons like Shukracharya. And the third thing is to really do something cool that we can read about and be attracted and therefore lose our attraction to things of this material world. Good question. Kundavasini, I'll answer your question later. Mr. Cohen, since Jiva Goswami is known as the greatest philosopher, why aren't all academic philosophers followers of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta? Because people do not surrender because they are defeated or find someone who knows more than them. That is called the false ego. You think scholars don't have false egos? That's right. You know, people don't admit defeat. I mean, like, for example, in the United States, we have someone who won the last election. And there's someone else who will not admit defeat because he has a big false ego. And I won't mention his name. This is life in the material world. So scholars have false egos. It's not because someone's a scholar that they're somehow the pure, so they're so intelligent. No, sometimes people who are the most intelligent are the most demoniac or the most puffed up people you can imagine. Janmaishvarya Shutasa Shivir Edamana Adapuman. It's described by Queen Kunti. People are bewildered by if they have good birth, if they have money, if they are beautiful, or if they're handsome, and also if they're intelligent. It bewilders one. So, by word jugglery, you can juggle words. That's why it says, Tarko Pratishta Shutina Vivina. In the Mahabharata, you can understand the absolute truth by logic and reasoning. Only by Mahajaniyena Gata Sapanta. So on that happy note, we have to end because I have to go to the temple for the program, and I will be trying to broadcast part of the program as soon as I get to the temple, which takes me about 5 minutes from here. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to his divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. Jai, we'll see everybody tomorrow. Tomorrow is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance day. We're going to be speaking about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Haribol.